Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timmeri from the Relevant Radio app. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri on Relevant Radio.
Great news this week coming out of Arizona with regard to abortion, banning nearly all abortions except for in necessary cases to save a woman's life. Now, all the articles online are saying to save a pregnant person's life. Let's just talk about women because that's who we're discussing. I was laughing as I'm just rereading it. It's funny how we glaze over certain statements now because they become so normative, but we'll discuss that a little bit more later on during the show, along with taking up the topic of loneliness and perfectionism. Is there such a thing as a perfectionist? Is there such a person as a perfectionist? Someone said it to me this morning, and I've heard that statement a lot from a few people in my purview, and I just keep thinking, I don't buy it. This idea, I'm a perfectionist, this label culture that we have today of identity and identity politics. I think perfectionism is another one of them, but I actually think there's something much deeper going on. So whether you're a recovering perfectionist or would like to be, or perhaps you're living with one, stay with me later on during the show. Joining me today is Sister Bethany Madonna. She's a religious sister with the Sisters of Life, currently residing in Phoenix, where she accompanies vulnerable pregnant women. I love the mission of the Sisters of Life, whether they're helping informing young adults or they're caring for women who find themselves pregnant, navigating the challenges of unplanned pregnancy. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri. Sister Bethany and I will discuss in a little bit the heroic story, maybe you've heard it, of a woman who chose to keep her baby against countless doctors recommending that she have an abortion so that she could receive additional cancer screening and treatment a couple of years ago. She chose life. Her baby survived. She made it through the pregnancy, had a clear bill of no cancer, and then later on, the cancer came back with a vengeance, and she died earlier this week. We're praying for her and her family. That's Jessica Hanna. But I wanted to walk through both some of her story and many of the great reflections. If you followed her story on social media, she's brought people in the thousands into, I think, a true model of faith, hope, and holiness, even in the face of death. And to see how she and her family navigated it as a Catholic is pretty profound. We'll discuss that with Sister Bethany in just a moment. Sister Bethany, welcome to Trending. It's wonderful to have you on today from the Sisters of Life.
Timmeri, thank you for this opportunity.
When I was thinking about the work you've done, I know you've worked as a vocations director for some years for the Sisters of Life, and now you reside in Phoenix, and you're working with many of the vulnerable pregnant women, and you speak all over the country, especially to young people. And I was curious to hear your take on what's happening in the culture and the challenges women are facing today, whether it's a philosophical ideology. What is it that you find predominant for Catholic women, and how do they fix it?
Yeah, I was grateful for the question because our secondary mission here in Arizona is actually a college outreach on ASU's campus. So tonight we have a women's night. We'll have probably about 50 to 75 girls with us, and we're covering different topics, but I can't tell you how enlightening conversations with them are just to hear what they're experiencing in their classrooms and just hearing amongst peers what they're engaging and navigating and dealing with. So yeah, it's quite the insight. And you just realize how heroic these hearts are that want to be faithful to Jesus, that are letting themselves fall in love with him and are listening to his voice speak over some of the real deceptions of the culture. So yeah, you could, between them and between the conversations we have with the pregnant women in our convent here, just listening to a real sense that I think there's some hopelessness that needs to be addressed for women, for women's hearts, that this is all there is, or I have to grasp. It's as old as the Garden of Eden. that's the first lie, that like, yeah, good things aren't coming my way unless I take, or it's all on me, or it's all my fault. So those are some of the things that we do hear a lot of in the heart of women, whether it be needing to achieve in college or needing to be like men, or wanting to have, yeah, the same powers, privileges, or even, yeah, sexually to try and dominate others or use and manipulate. We see a lot of women settling for less than their dignity. And that's something that I think is such a gift, to be able to almost reflect back to them their own goodness, their own belovedness, and their own greatness, quite frankly.
I think that's a very profound reflection, that hopelessness is predominant among women today. I was intrigued when you say that, whether it's women who are saying, well, is this all there is? Or whether it's the grasping and taking that's happening in our culture. I find that language is not often used, but in many respects, I think could be a definition for modern day feminist ideology, that I take what I want, whether it's the positive language that people see as breaking glass ceilings, but at the end of the day, it's taking. And often it's even usurping responsibility that isn't ours as women. And that's occurring within relationships, within marriages, even within the sexual scene that you're seeing on college campuses today as well, which you just spoke of.
Yeah. So just a reminder of, we speak of one's dignity, but like just the dignity of the human person, the dignity of my body, the dignity of my soul, that my love is particular and unique and distinct and totally unrepeatable, irreplaceable, that I've been given this life and chosen to exist at this moment in history intentionally, that God willed me, loved me, and knew that this would be my day. That the Lord is raising up saints, prophets, and martyrs to meet the needs of each day. So that's what we're called to do, to really be able to come close to Jesus and be united to him and give our failings and our frailties and our weaknesses and our vulnerabilities and our temptations and our sin to him, and constantly to be depending on him more and more with trust and surrender and acceptance of his grace with gratitude for the mercy that it is, you know, and that'll transform our own hearts and the way that we see others, the way that we interact with them, the bar that we set, the standards that we hold for ourselves and others, being both merciful, but also, holding on to the truth of what we're called to, and the glory and the struggle that it entails is actually glorious.
It's something that has been a bit of a trend lately I've been hearing of, and I don't know if you've encountered this, but we've been hearing a lot recently, and I'm starting to see it firsthand after the last year of comments on it, is that a lot of Catholic marriages, seemingly strong, let's say traditional Catholic marriages, are falling apart. And often when looking at what's happening, whether there are often cases of pornography use among other things, but a lot of the women are stepping out. They're looking around, they're going, is this all there is? I'd rather have a career. And they're going from, you could arguably say, radically traditional Catholic lives and homeschooling, having a lot of kids, or just striving so hard seemingly from the outside of what it looks like for us looking in. And I was wondering if you could maybe touch on the hopelessness that's occurring for a lot of women who are in the thick of that family life, and how to navigate and kind of lift their heads above that. And I'll just give one other example. I was talking to a friend the other day, and she's struggling with some health issues. And she finally went to the doctor, and she's going, something's wrong with me. We've got to figure this out. And his response was, you're a mom of three kids. Go on your merry way. Just figure it out. And it was a little sad that that was kind of the medical approach. And I think there may have been certainly some honesty to it and some integrity even. But at the same time, I think our culture says, well, yeah, you're a mom of three kids. That's your problem. So go figure it out. This is just where you're at. And it does leave women in this place of saying, well, is there all this is? Is this why I'm, quote, perpetually suffering or uneasy? Can you speak to that challenge right now for women?
Yeah, no, I'm grateful for that, Timory. And I think you've touched on something really, really tender in the heart, because it's like where all of my hopes and dreams meet all of my disappointments and disillusionments, you know, with what holiness is going to look like for me, or what my vocation fulfilled is going to look like for me, or what love is. And it's so messy and it's so imperfect that we're like, what? You know, I've been dreaming and fantasizing, and I thought it would be a certain way. And it's I'm so stunned at my own incapacities and weaknesses. And I'm also stunned at those of another, you know. And so I can speak just from what I've seen. We have beautiful groups here in Phoenix that I've been so edified by. We have a mother's group that follows the Seven Sorrows of Mary, and you'd think that they'd be a downhearted group. But honestly, by embracing sorrow in union with Mary, they're so filled with joy. And it's these wives and mothers who come together regularly to pray together, to uphold one another, to intercede for the others, to encourage the others on. So the mothers who are becoming empty nesters are looking at the ones with their hands full and saying, listen, it doesn't end here. Like, it's so worth it. It's so worth it. And you're doing a great job. And you're not alone. And let's raise our families together. Let's encourage each other in our marriages. Like, I do think that there is a need, because everyone knows the family is the last battle and that marriage is under attack. And that's just plain as day, that the enemy hates what God loves and what images the Trinity, which is the union of husband and wife in marriage. And so, of course, the battle's on. And I'm very moved by the groups of women who come together. I'm very moved by the couples that intentionally mentor younger couples or come together to speak about different things and grow in their faith together. I've been profoundly aware of a movement, being here in Phoenix, that the Knights of Columbus have picked up. But Bishop Olmsted wrote a letter on masculinity and fatherhood, and it's called Into the Breach. Mm-hmm. And I do have to say, just upholding men after the feminist revolution, that so confused roles and families and gender and caused some chaos in our own hearts as women, you know, to understand the complementarity. It is beautiful to be restored and renewed. And like, what was the vision, and how can I uphold it? How can I uphold it in my spouse, where I both encourage him and inspire him by my love and by my generosity, while at the same time I allow him to serve, uphold, and guide me as spouse. So, yeah, it's an amazing thing, Timory, to see what's happening in the culture. But I don't think we need to just let the waters sweep us away. You know, when you pass through the water, I will be with you. The Lord said in Isaiah, and he sees the floods, and he's with us, and he's going to carry us, and he's going to inspire our own hearts. How do I rekindle the love if it's turned into an ash heap? You know, like, how do I get restored? It's okay to ask for help. Do I need to have, you know, do I need to ask for a mommy's day out, or do I need to really make the sacrifice for a date night? You know, whatever that entails. So yeah, there's many ways. And I think it's because it requires sacrifice, we can be hesitant to make it, but it's so, it's so worth it in the long run to have.
So much of what you're saying is reminding me of the importance, Sister Bethany, of being aware of your situation, like seeing yourself and your situation for what it really is, the good and bad and the ugly, the unchangeable, the changeable, maybe those little boosts that you might need. I was intrigued by when you mentioned the importance of kind of that idea of complementing ourselves and others who are in that similar phase in life. And it reminds me of how millennials down are some of the most unaffirmed people we see, from just what social psychology is saying, and how important it is that there's that confidence that's built up, that affirmation of just our own person, but also of one another, that can really be passed on if we're supporting one another in our communities. And I think that's lived in many ways by a lot of the intergenerational support, both in families and also in the church communities and broader society. If you see a stranger and they're struggling with kids, and you can have a compliment or a word, or if someone's been in a phase in life that you've been in, that just that support and that empathy is so significant. And I do just want to come back. You mentioned devotion to the seven sorrows. It's such a beautiful devotion because it sees the joys and the sorrows of Our Lady.
Yes.
And how she was able to abide with him. And maybe we can touch on that a little bit more in just a moment. If you're just joining me, that's Sister Bethany Madonna, for she's one of the Sisters of Life that accompanies vulnerable women as they face the challenges of pregnancy today. She also works with youth there in Phoenix, Arizona. And we'll be right back to discuss the heroic life of a woman who chose life against doctors' recommendations after she was diagnosed with breast cancer. Learn a little bit more about her life and her incredible, incredible model of faith, hope, and holiness, even in the face of death.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Is there really such a thing as a perfectionist? I don't think so. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Our toll-free line is 888-914-9149, and it's sponsored by Catholic Order Foresters Life Insurance. More on that in a moment, because I think it really is, this whole idea of being a perfectionist really is a religious issue with a faith-based response. More on that in a moment. Joining me now is Sister Bethany Madonna. She's a religious sister with the Sisters of Life, and she currently resides in Phoenix, Arizona, where she accompanies vulnerable pregnant women along with working with college-age students as well. And I saw this story earlier today. Maybe you followed Jessica Hanna on Instagram over the last couple of years. In 2022, Jessica was 14 weeks pregnant when she discovered that she was pregnant with, not just pregnant, but facing breast cancer as well. So pregnant with cancer, navigating that seemingly impossible challenge. Now, immediately, countless doctors advised her, told her to have an abortion. Her being Catholic and standing by her pro-life Catholic convictions, declined the abortion. She did undergo surgery where they found a tumor that was about 13 centimeters, along with 43 of her lymph nodes that also had cancer in them. They went through, did the surgery, but did not enter into any additional scans, tests, or treatment for the body because she was pregnant. Now, her faith-filled journey continued to make its way publicly onto social media as she ended up having a baby boy. It was her fourth child, three boys and one girl. And after the birth of her son, she had a clean bill of health, no cancer. Cancer hadn't spread. They were very, very grateful. Well, later that same year, she ended up receiving another diagnosis where the cancer had come back and now as stage 4 cancer. Now, news broke just a couple of days ago that this beautiful woman who chose life for her child, Jessica Hanna, in the face of all of the circumstances she was facing medically, actually ended up dying this weekend after battling cancer over the last couple of years. She leaves behind her husband and her 4 children. And I am taken aback because this is the first I've actually heard of her story. And joining me now is Sister Bethany Madonna from the Sisters of Life. Sister, I am astounded by this woman's faith and hope and holiness in the face of death and her peacefulness with regard to the outcome of the entire situation. I'd love to hear your thoughts and maybe drill back into a little bit more of her story as well.
Yeah, also when I read it, I think it's so profound that she passed away on the eve of Divine Mercy Sunday as well, just recognizing the little that I read about her last Good Friday, the message that she wrote about being in her own Good Friday with Jesus. She just had such a beautiful recognition of, wanting to offer everything, every suffering for even an atonement for sin, any sin that she'd committed, and wanting to be able to be so united to Jesus in this suffering and thanking him for his death that brings a resurrection. So her looking forward to her Easter Sunday, knowing that it was coming, that she had lived this faithfully and with the Lord and for his glory. I think she was very detached. She was like, you know, if we get a miracle, that's how this will glorify the Lord, or others will be able to watch me die peacefully and in total trustful surrender, which really in this culture of euthanasia and wanting to be in control even of that sacred moment, to take it in my hands and to, you know, choose it and to orchestrate it in the way that I want it to go. It's so beautiful to see this woman and to know that her husband too was such a support to her, and that God is going to provide very lavishly for these children. I think about John Paul II and St. Therese who lost their moms at very early ages. And the Lord is not outdone in generosity when he asks for a generous gift. And I can't imagine the love of the Blessed Mother for these littles.
And as you mentioned, she on Good Friday, she was posting about how the cancer had become worse during Lent and they were really praying for a miracle. But there's also resignation to if that miracle didn't occur. She said at one point when writing on social media, "I don't know where God is taking me. Is he going to take me to the path where I need to show people how to die gracefully with his grace and mercy? Or is he going to show a miracle?" And I thought that was very profound because I think that even in our Catholic culture, we can get wrapped up on, okay, God will give you that miracle. And we have our eyes set on what it will be, whether it's healing, whether it's the conception of a baby in the face of infertility, whatever it might be. And it's almost as if that thing, that solution is where our hope and faith are instead of in God and what his works are and what a miracle is. And I just look at her story and I hear her reflection. She was so closely united to our Lord through her suffering that I see the miracle of this woman who you can't help but have this great faith in that she is going to be, if not already, with Jesus for the faith and fidelity she had. And again, we don't know her life circumstances, but that union that was very profound in her writings. And I think it showed in the fact that she was willing to face death if that was the mercy and grace that God intended over a miracle for her, that would be a miraculous healing versus a miraculous death.
Yes. And I totally agree. I think sometimes we can really, almost make demands of God, or tell him to prove himself, you know, versus what she's done here, which is basically like, you're good. And I trust you entirely. And whatever you choose is the best. I want to be part of it. And I want to give my yes, my wholehearted yes. And it's very Marian because, you know, the Blessed Mother looking at her son on the crucifix, it's very hard to believe all the promises that she'd received, that this was being answered, you know, and I think that's what faith is, being able to press into the yes with trust, even in the appearance of utter absence, you know, of God's presence. If anything, he's more present, when we let him be.
I was looking more at the story. If you're just joining us, this is a little bit of a reflection on the life of this woman, Jessica Hanna, who declined multiple recommendations for an abortion from medical professionals, from doctors, after she received a diagnosis of breast cancer while pregnant a couple years ago. She had the cancer removed, but didn't go through additional testing and treatment while pregnant, and came up after the pregnancy, after her baby boy, her fourth child, was born with a clean bill, no additional cancer. She was good. And then the cancer came back as stage 4 later that same year. She's been battling cancer over the last couple of years and recently died this weekend, with her being mourned and left behind, leaving behind her 4 children along with her husband. And you mentioned earlier, Sister, and just joining me now is Sister Bethany Madonna from the Sisters of Life, who works with women who are struggling, navigating pregnancies, navigating unplanned pregnancies, choosing life for their children. But you mentioned some of her comments about Good Friday and also Easter Sunday and the resurrection, and she was really suffering during this Lent. She shared just a little bit toward the end of Lent, especially on Good Friday, and she commented where she said, be sure to remember with every Good Friday comes an Easter Sunday. She said, with death comes resurrection. She said, Christ made it so. And although I think for some, you hear the story and people say, what a waste. Look, her children are going to suffer. But I see what an example. You mentioned the abundance of graces that God showers down on families after the loss of a parent. And you gave the example of St. John Paul II and Therese. But I also see what a blessing in that she's seen that Jesus Christ in the great conquering of death through Easter made it so that we can enter into the resurrection, that we can enter into heaven with him. And that's exactly what this Easter season is actually all about. It's about death here on earth and life with Christ in heaven. And yet we tend to reduce it toward this fun celebration for food and miss that message.
And I do think, Tamara, you're exactly right. In this culture where there's kind of been an eclipse of God, there's a real fear of death, you know? And for us to see this woman seeing death as a door and Jesus on the other side of it, he is such a powerful image. And if we've lived, longing for him and wanting to be with him and wanting to engage in the joy and the fullness of heaven, I think part of life is actually coming around from that wound in the garden, the original wound of distrusting God's goodness and disobeying and even fearing him then and living in shame. So much of our life is a healing from that and receiving what Jesus came to do and saving us by coming at the new Adam, coming and destroying the enemy and death itself, and then becoming the fruit of the tree of life that we get to eat in the Eucharist. You know, it's just so powerful how he redeemed everything from that original wound. And he wants to heal us of anything that would keep us from longing for heaven or from wanting to be with the Father, to be united forever with the Blessed Trinity. He wants us to long for that and to recognize that this earth, many elements are beautiful and it's a gift, but we're also in a valley of tears and it won't last. Death will come to all of us and we don't know when. And so, this life is a preparation for that reunion with the God who made us.
That's Sister Bethany Madonna here on Trending with Timur on Relevant Radio. If you'd like to learn more about her and her work with the Sisters of Life, they're doing wonderful work, both working on college campuses along with assisting women through navigating the choice of life, the great gift of children, and accompanying them during their pregnancies. You can learn more at sistersoflife.org. That's sistersoflife.org. Sister Bethany Madonna will also be a speaker at the National Eucharistic Congress coming up this summer. I hope you'll be there. We'll be there. Relevant Radio will be. If you're interested in learning more, just head over to relevantradio.com/indie. That's relevantradio.com/indie to learn more about the National Eucharistic Congress where Sister Bethany will be speaking. I'll be right back in just a moment. Would love to hear your thoughts on what you think the solution to loneliness is. Another study came out looking at research both in Europe and the United States regarding the rise in loneliness. But what's to be done? Also, do you think there's such a thing as perfectionists? I'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I'll dive into it a little bit more tomorrow, but I did want to mention, and I was just joined by Sister Bethany Madonna, who's working, serving the women, pregnant women in Phoenix, Arizona. Well, there's great news coming out of Phoenix, Arizona, more so out of the whole state, and that is that abortion will be nearly entirely illegal in the state of Arizona after the Supreme Court on Tuesday has upheld an 1864 law where the people, prior to a time when feminism seemed to be the law of the land, made performing abortions a felony. In fact, it will be in about just 2 weeks here, punishable by multiple years in prison. And it's interesting when you hear people talking about this, quote, archaic law. It's not an archaic law. It's a time when we must have seemed to be more civilized and how we understood and respected and honored and celebrated motherhood along with children. I'll share more on this good news tomorrow, because there are problems, of course, when there's still exceptions for saving the life of the mother, because there's no such thing. When do we have to kill a mom so that baby might live? Or when do we have to kill a baby so that mom might live? It's a very silly argument. You separate the two from one another, even if that separation, that early delivery, occurs prior to the time of viability. And then you fight to the best of the ability to protect and save both mom and baby. But those are in the rare circumstances where medical treatment is so necessitated that mom and baby need to be separated from one another. And that's a very important distinction. We never intentionally go in to kill a baby. But in the meantime, we're celebrating this great news in Arizona as it joins 16 other states in having very strong pro-life laws. The bottom line is that women and babies' lives will be saved. Women deserve laws that support a hope-filled life. And that hope-filled life doesn't demand death of a child in order to have a seemingly better quality of life. Because that's what women are being told. Have this abortion so that your quality of life can be sustained, or so that you can make that quality of life that you want down the road. Quality of life includes the body and the soul. That includes one's mental health and physical health. Our bodies as women matter. Our mental health matters. And we know that abortion leaves our bodies damaged and ravaged by the negative impact of bad, seemingly, medicine. And it's damaging psychologically the mental health of women. That's why Arizona is joining the list of states upholding pro-life laws protecting women and babies. And this is fundamental for the future of women. It's fundamental for building a true quality of life that's full of hope and truth, that doesn't compromise our bodies and doesn't compromise our mental health, not to mention our souls. Women and babies should be protected from abortion via the law. And this is important. Women and babies must be protected from the law, even when there are some women who say they don't want it, even when there are people who disagree. It's important that we still fight and stand for just and true laws that uphold the value of moms and babies and marriage. So praise God for the news out of Arizona, and thank you for all of you who have been on the front line across this nation, but especially this week in the state of Arizona, who have fought for strong pro-life laws that protect women and babies. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri here on Relevant Radio. I would love to hear from you. What do you think the solution to loneliness is? Have you experienced loneliness in your own life? What changed? What fixed it? What did you have to do, or what was brought into your life? The number is 888-914-9149. I was reading an article earlier today, and the title is "Loneliness Can Kill, and New Research Shows Middle-Aged Americans Are Particularly Vulnerable." The article is written by Associate Professor of Psychology from Arizona State University, Frank J. Inferna. He, along with a number of other researchers, have a recent study published in American Psychologist, and they looked into the lives of over 53,000 middle-aged adults, both in the United States and in 13 European nations between the time of 2002 and 2020. And the findings show that we have rising levels of loneliness that are unprecedented in recorded history. Now, they point back even to times such as 2007 to 2009, where we saw a lot of middle-aged adults reporting poorer mental health and physical health than before. What they point to in the research is that heightened levels of loneliness actually impact higher rates of chronic illness, pain, and disability. Loneliness, they're emphasizing, is bad for your health. Loneliness increases your vulnerability to everything from sickness to even our mental health, depression, chronic illnesses, and even premature death. So what does the article say? Loneliness kills. Loneliness is a breeding ground for sickness, both mental health sickness and physical sickness, and ultimately death. So here's the question. What's the solution? What heals and cures and stops loneliness? I think that this is a question we need to be asking ourselves, whether perhaps you yourself are struggling with seasons of isolation. Maybe you're dealing with a season of new friendships. People have moved away. I remember there was a season a number of years ago when I was single. Well, I was dating my husband. He was living in a different part of the state that was only travelable ultimately by airplane. Most of my friends from the area after college hadn't stuck around, and all the new friends I'd made after college had all moved out of the state. One, I remember, went to Washington, one went back to the East Coast, and I remember just finding this huge void of where all of the relationships and friendships in my immediate area had suddenly disappeared within about a month or two of each other. And I was working down in San Diego, and my family was living about an hour, hour and a half away, and it was this void that was there. And I knew the importance of needing to be engaged with people, face-to-face quality time, that I shouldn't and couldn't exclusively dive into the work unit, even if it was ministry that I was engaging in, that people need people. And that's what this article and all this research is ultimately showing. People need people. You hear the words loneliness can kill. Well, I think the better headline is we need each other. We need our family, our friendships. We need to get over and tolerate the challenging circumstances, the burdening responsibilities, or the quirky personalities that have to be navigated when encountering other people, or even when making new friendships. And sure, I think that we should recognize there are seasons of life where there will be rich relationships. But I also really do recognize, and I've seen this in different seasons of my life, where sometimes those relationships aren't as rich and maybe aren't as edifying. But I had to recognize the importance of still spending time with people, both for their sake and for mine. Now, many and various things can contribute to isolation and loneliness. People living further away from families than ever before, sometimes not even talking to them. Prolonged singleness. Delayed child rearing. Infertility. Just raising kids and being home all the time and not really seeing any other faces than your kids. The challenges of work and responsibility and the time it takes and the lack of ability to enter into relationships. All of these are reasons, but all of these are also excuses not to engage face to face with people. I think we make a lot of excuses, and listen to me here. We make a lot of excuses for not spending time with the people who are in our purview, for not spending time with the people who we don't want to spend time with, who are accessible. I'm not saying they're necessarily going to be your best friend, but what I am saying is that whether it's family, friends, people in your local community, we tend to put up a lot of walls, barriers, judgments, prejudices that prevent us or are used as excuses for entering into relationships with other people. We're really good at making excuses for not going to that event, for somehow declining or avoiding saying hello to a person. And so what I want to challenge you to is to consider real solutions to loneliness. Whatever your season in life is, whether you're in a void of rich relationships, you're lonely, you're isolated, start engaging with the people who are immediately in your surroundings. Now, these might be people who you see every day at the grocery store. Start saying hello. Leave your phone in the car. Write the list if you've got to for your shopping. It could be your family members in your own home who, for some reason or another, you've chosen to decline that relationship that's right in front of you because it's not enough in your judgment. It could be family in the area. It could be a friendship that is maybe a little less than satisfactory, but is still a friendship and it's someone who's nearby. We need people. And I know we've discussed types of friendship and the best types of friendship that we should enter into, but it's important that we're entering into encounters with each other. It's easy to say, well, these are my family members and these are my friends and these are the only people I associate with and I'm going to have a lowly view of others and not give them my time of day. That's tribalism. That's isolation. That's exclusivity. And sometimes we don't realize it, but we're actually engaging in exclusive relationships in an unhealthy way just by not being open and willing to have a conversation or welcome people into our life and our space. So here's my challenge to you. Are you lonely or do you know someone who is? Get uncomfortable. Decide to go to that next church event, that next invitation for coffee. Be willing to go to that group. I was just talking to someone the other day. They were so excited. They're like, I'm in a season of life where I could actually, you know, I have kind of an empty nest. I don't have kids around as much. And I could go and join that board game club for people over 55. And that sounds like a blast. I won't know anybody, but I can go and play games. I would love that. I would love to just go and join board game club. I think that's awesome. But there are a lot of opportunities for things that we're interested in that we can find common relationships and friendships. Perhaps they won't be the super in-depth relationships we're longing for, but ultimately that deep longing we have for a rich and edifying relationship can only be filled by God. Because that void for other human beings, that void for the perfect human being, for that perfect friendship, can't be filled by a spouse. It can't be filled by a parent. It can't be filled by a child. It can only be filled by Jesus Christ himself. And so what's the solution to loneliness? Get uncomfortable, engage in relationships, but dive into your faith. God will surprise you and might even make you laugh with the friendships you'll suddenly discover. Might even be an intergenerational friendship, someone who's much older or younger than you. And we live at a time where as we age, there can be seasons of life where you feel less relevant. And perhaps your wisdom and love and empathy can be passed on in a relationship with someone who's younger, a mentorship, a mentee. Perhaps your need for counsel, the fact that maybe you don't have a parent or good advisors, can be a gift to someone who is in that season of isolation. But don't forget the faith component. We can look at all of these solutions to cure cancer, to stop the mental health crises, to end loneliness. But that great, deep, and abiding longing that's, I think, and the hearts of all people ultimately is a longing for God. And so are you praying? Are you going to Mass? Are you sitting here saying, I don't have any friends, but you're not even willing to perhaps wake up a little earlier to go to Mass first thing in the morning to not just be with Jesus Christ, but also to be with other people who believe and worship God. Even if that's the only encounter you have, a brief muttered hello at a 6:45 a.m. Mass early in the morning. Faces become familiar. And familiarity leads to brief, little, intricate conversations that can occur. Maybe about the weather, maybe about something more. I don't know who you choose, how vulnerable you may or may not be. And I hate that word. Vulnerability isn't the solution. But honesty and putting yourself out there in faith, in prayer, and empathy are part of that solution. You're listening to Trending with Timmery here on Relevant Radio. I was told multiple times over the last week by a couple people, whether in the circumstances of making an excuse for something that wasn't done properly or just thrown out there as a label, I heard these words, and maybe you say them or maybe you've heard them yourself. Quote, I'm a perfectionist. I'm a perfectionist. Is there really such a thing as a perfectionist? I really do ask that question. Is there really such thing as a perfectionist? Because I can think of examples when someone else has said something about another person who's really said that person's a perfectionist. And I would argue that that person was very meticulous or really gifted at particular things. Maybe at editing a paper that they wrote or a message, or meticulous and gifted at cleaning. I mean, there can be so many things. Finding any mistakes as an accountant. There are many different things. I think there's such a thing as gifts, but I don't believe in such a thing as perfectionism. So that argument of I'm a perfectionist always strikes me as rather odd. What it really is a cry of the mind and the soul for the perfect order in love of Christ himself. Jesus is the answer to this statement or even that label, I'm a perfectionist. You're not a perfectionist. You're just driving yourself mad. And that's what this label of perfectionism is. We live at this time where everyone seems to want to label themselves as something. Perfectionist is one of those. The gender craze is another. When you label yourself as a perfectionist, and I'll just raise my hand here. I think that sometimes people who love to say, oh, I'm a type A personality. It's another way almost of saying I'm a perfectionist. And I do believe there is such a thing as a type A personality. But I've heard it said so often, and I think when you're telling yourself you're a perfectionist, what you're saying is you can't be accepted or loved by yourself or others unless you do things exactly as you think yourself or others want them done. So again, I'll say that again. What is being a perfectionist? It's telling yourself you can't be accepted or loved by yourself or anyone else, even God, unless you do the things exactly as, get this, you think that it should be done, or as you think others think that that thing should be done. Whether it's the way that your body looks, the way you eat, what you eat, how you pray, where you pray, who sees you, what's posted on social media. Ultimately, perfectionism is really just living a life of comparison, which is one of the lowest levels of happiness. That label, if you find yourself saying, I'm a perfectionist, if you find yourself thinking that, well, I'm unlovable unless my house is perfectly clean. I'm unlovable unless I'm an X weight or shoe size. That's spiritual warfare. Saying you're a perfectionist or when someone else does, that is spiritual warfare. It's a way that you've allowed the enemy, Satan himself, to convince you and for you to convince yourself that you will never be enough. You constantly have to keep doing. And so then it turns into you've been convinced that you have to grasp for control. Perfect order. Perfectionism. And you might even start to project this expectation onto others, even though ultimately it's about you and the spiritual warfare that is telling you that you're never good enough and you're never enough. Again, this label of perfectionism starts to be thrown out there. You start to identify as being the perfectionist. You start to use perfectionism as the excuse for why you didn't do something, quote, perfectly or as you think it should be done. You identify and want to be identified by the label of perfect. But ultimately, here's the kicker. And this is what so many of our choices and labels and sins come down to, because it is a sin at the end of the day. It's ultimately a form of pride. The sin of all sins. The vice of all vices. You are driving yourself mad if you're trying to strive to be perfect, because only God himself is perfect and only God makes others perfect. So if you're trying to call yourself a perfectionist, you are trying to be God. Now, I think that perfectionism can function in different ways for men versus women. And I think perfectionism can eat alive women in a different way than it can men. Women have this perpetual interior dialogue. In fact, my mom sent me a message earlier that I saw just before starting the show, and it's a photo of my brother and sister when they're younger, and I am just cracking up looking at this photo. It's my two younger siblings, and one is my younger sibling, and she's got this face and this mouth that was clearly talking 100 miles an hour and also reacting and responding to whatever someone else was saying. And then there's my brother sitting drinking his drink with his eyes up to the ceiling, completely zoning out, thinking about probably nothing, while girls have a million things on their mind. Now, bring this back to being a perfectionist. I think that being a perfectionist, quote, that label or that identity or that attempted desire for women is it impacts the interior dialogue of women, where women are eating themselves alive. I think women already do in that interior dialogue, but it's even worse because you're saying, I'm unlovable unless I do X, unless I look like X. And then you start to project that on others, thinking that other people only think you're lovable or acceptable under these circumstances. And even worse, you think it of God. God couldn't love me unless. And for men, men really struggle with a lot of self-doubt. And so if you combine perfectionism with natural self-doubt, if you combine perfectionism with imposter syndrome, that a lot of men just feel like they're big posers and failures, well, you have men who are just completely baffled and atrophying and shutting down to the point of not doing anything. But then you have sacred scripture. I keep thinking of the words of Ecclesiastes, chapter 1, verse 2. Vanity of vanity, everything is vanity. If we keep living by this label of perfectionism, or maybe we say, I can't be perfect, so I reject it and do the opposite and almost become a slothful. Well, you're searching for God in all the wrong places. You're trying to define your own value that only God himself can give. And you're trying to become God because God alone perfects the human person. So I would argue and I challenge you, if you're looking for a solution, if you're struggling with perfectionism or you know someone who is, pray the Our Father and slow down. Thy name, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Give us your daily bread and trust in him. This is Timory from Trending with Timory. Thursday, biologist Dr. Stacy Trisenkos will join me during this Easter season. What was Christ's resurrected body made of? We'll dive into where the resurrection of Christ and science collide, providing proofs for the life of Jesus Christ. Join me daily, 6 p.m. Central, on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.